This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Book bans, or book challenges, as people in that community like to call them, have been a hot-button issue in our country for a few years now, especially when it comes to books featuring or written by people of color and people in the LGBT community. Bans on those books can have a profound effect on the people represented in them. But what effect do those challenges have on our society and our ability to engage with our democracy? Next week, on Tuesday and Wednesday, the University of Illinois system is going to be holding a symposium on all this in Urbana-Champaign, the campus there. It's called Free People Read Freely: Literacy, Inclusion, and Democracy. There's a wait list to attend this free event. We'll have the information on how to sign up on our website, 21stshow.org. The opening keynote conversation Tuesday morning will feature two award-winning authors talking about what it means to read freely. And my guest today is moderating that discussion. Ruby Mendenhall wears many hats. She has one of those excellent titles of Catherine Lee Baines Dallenbach Professor in Liberal Arts and Sciences at Illinois. She's an associate professor in sociology, African American studies, urban and regional planning, and social work. She is also Urbana's current poet laureate. Ruby, thank you so much for making the time to be with us. Welcome back to the 21st show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about our conversation.
So last year, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a law effectively banning book bans in our state. We were the first state in the country reportedly to do that. It still hasn't stopped these kind of discussions about book challenges. There's a controversy in Metropolis in southern Illinois earlier this year over books being removed from the library and over the vote to adopt the Library Bill of Rights. We're not going to get into that, but how are you seeing these sort of national conversations about book challenges play out here in Illinois, even with this law in place?
I think it's important to have conversations about reading freely, right, as we will talk about. And I want to start just with a quote from one of my students in sociology, Carol Lee Jones, who's doing a dissertation about banned books in prisons. And one of the quotes, and she doesn't know I'm reading her quote, she says that the censorship, and this is her quote, defines and regulates the limits of what can be known and expressed, but may also be experienced by those who are incarcerated as control and surveillance of both the body and the mind.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but I wonder what sort of books are banned in prisons. I guess we could say, obviously, like How to Make an Improvised Weapon or something. You could see that, but I'm guessing it's a broader list than that.
Right. And pretty much books that people object to based on their content, ideas, or themes could even be books around the history of African Americans, the history of abuse inside of prisons. It ranges.
So what effect do book challenges have on the people who are represented in those books that are now getting removed from shelves across the country?
I think it's really important that people's stories are able to be shared widely. I think when you limit that, when you ban it, then you're also limiting the knowledge that people have of this country, of different systems, of people's personal experiences. I know one of the authors that we'll speak to, George Johnson, and his book is All Boys Aren't Blue, and he talks about how many feel like some of the content may not be it shouldn't be kind of told to younger people, but he makes the argument that many of those younger people have the experience that he had. And so when they aren't able to read books of experiences that they're having, then it could also mean that they don't know how to navigate or can't have a sense that things can get better or how to help or even how to change and resist the system that is causing many of the harms.
Well, that's a good maybe entree into talking about the guests, and we can come to the other one later. But let's start with George Johnson. So you mentioned the book is called All Boys Aren't Blue. It's a memoir for young adults? But talk about that. What is the book about?
Well, it's a memoir about his life of just kind of growing up, both his experiences as a African-American and then also a member of the LGBT community. It talks about some of the trauma that he experienced at a very young age. I think he was maybe five when he and his brothers got into a fight with some other boys, and some of his teeth were kicked out, and he talks about what that meant throughout his life, especially in terms of him smiling and kind of feeling safe. And then also as he gets older and recognizing that he's outside of the gender and sexual norms, just kind of navigating those experiences. The so-called norms, I should say.
So-called norms, sure. Yeah. The other guest you're going to be talking with is Clint Smith, who's mm-hmm. written a very well-known, it was a number one bestseller book. It's called How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning mm-hmm. with the History of Slavery Across America. For people who haven't read that, can you give us a sort of thumbnail description of that book?
Yeah, just in general, kind of goes through, was it eight places, I think, in the U.S. and kind of tours monuments and landmarks. Including Monticello Cello Plantation with Thomas Jefferson, Whitney Plantation, Angola Plantation, and other places, and really trying to imagine the lives of those who were almost in many ways lost to history, right, where their stories weren't told, and kind of talking about even policing and how a lot of that had its roots in slavery after emancipation, when, right, legally you couldn't enslave people, but then how the prison system kind of was established in terms of being able to compel people to work for free. And then there was a quote in the book, I'll paraphrase, I can't remember it exactly, but it talks about many of the white individuals talked about how when black individuals were slaves, they were enslaved humans. There was some incentive to protect them in terms of their health and other things. But in this new system that if one of them died, then you just get another one. So it kind of covers all of those different places and the history and how we tell history in this country and how we don't tell history in this country. One of the things that struck me was he was talking about kind of being on a tour and kind of listening to how people tell the story. And I myself have been on several tours in different places and really listening for how people tell the stories, what words they use. Some may say workers instead of enslaved individuals, or they'll say other things. And it's really heartbreaking. It's frustrating. And then even sometimes in those sessions, right, like I'll ask questions and then I'll point out, yes, but it's also this and the brutality, right, is not quite captured in other things. So those are some of the highlights of the book.
Yeah, that's fascinating to actually have that experience where you feel like wanting to correct someone giving a tour. I can imagine that. So
yeah, and also, yeah, and I'll just say too, right, because you know, my ancestors were enslaved, and you think about, again, just the brutality and how it continues even up to today. And to also some of the fight that's going on now is whether to talk about this history, whether to talk about the role that it played and what we're looking at now. So it's it really is a feeling that's hard to describe. It's an emotional experience. And also, that's why I'm a big, big fan of museums. I'm a big, big fan of books that tell different stories, because a lot in the books are also things that aren't traditionally heard or told. Another story from the book is when he was visiting Thomas Jefferson's old plantation, and the guide actually did some really interesting things and kind of showing the other side and shifting people's narrative of how they believe Thomas Jefferson is one of our founding fathers to be. And that was really important, right? So even as people are trained to go and tell the stories, right, and to pass the word, that they're really trained about these are things we typically don't feel comfortable talking about. And when people are in those sacred spaces, right, because people lost their lives, their children, ripped apart from families, many horrific things and beautiful things also happen, because as descendants of those who were enslaved, as descendants of Africans, they kept a lot of their traditions. They loved, they played, they did other things. So I don't want to say it was only brutality and only horrific things. There's agency that still allowed, despite those conditions, for their humanity to shine through. but it's just important that who tells the story, that they have a sense of the complexity of the sacredness of it.
It strikes me that, so we're talking about telling stories about how stories are told, and those stories themselves are being banned. Can you talk about the experience that Clint Smith and George Johnson have had with their books being banned or challenged?
Well, that's part of the conversation. Some of the questions that we will ask is how, when you do put your kind of words and your experience out into the world, which is a very personal, right, thing, you're making the private public, what does it mean then to have such a response where it is banned? Those are some of the questions that our audience can stay tuned to hear from their kind of perspective.
Yeah, from their perspective. Yeah. You know, it also strikes me at the beginning of the show today, we talked about how President Biden is signing designation of a monument, a national monument for the site of the so-called race riot in Springfield, Illinois in 1908 today. Another example, I guess, of history that in some ways has been whitewashed over time. And now people are, you know, for quite a while now, have been trying to rectify that and bring that to more accuracy and national prominence. So we've been talking about, and we're coming to the end of our time together. But from a more broad standpoint, what does it mean to you to read freely, as the title of this event is?
I love when you said that. And so I'm going to take you to my childhood for a moment, if you will. Bear with me. When I was growing up, there was a bookmobile, right? Like if I was in the audience, I'd say, raise your hand. There's some people in the studio. Raise your hand. Like if you had a bookmobile when you were growing up, right? Like to me, that allowed me to go to many worlds, to experience many people. And I will say that when I took out the books, it was mostly books by white authors, like Pippi Longstocking, Little House on the Prairie, like all of those were in the bookmobile, and I enjoyed that. But as a Black female, I also would have loved to have read other books by Black authors and really didn't have a sense of the profound work that was out there in the collection of work until really I went to college. And so to me, to read freely means that all children across the spectrum of race, class, gender, sexuality, all of that, that they get a chance to experience the triumphs and the challenges of individuals who are living life in many different ways, living life boldly and unfortunately sometimes having serious challenges that in many ways they have to gather a strength not to have their spirit broken. And I think it's important as a society, right? Like it's not just one story, and it's not just one story that should be privileged and one story that's at the center, but all of the stories should be privileged. So to read freely means to have access to all of that. And again, I love the bookmobile, and you bring that access to people's neighborhoods, you bring it to their streets. I love when I'm out and about and I see the free libraries, right? And how people can come up, open it, and take a book that hopefully can be transformative. I've just been reading a few books that have literally transformed how I think about things. They've caused me to shed tears. Reading is such a powerful, transformative tool that it should be, people should be able to read and read freely and broadly.
The symposium next week is called Free People Read Freely, Literacy, Inclusion, and Democracy. It's at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. It's free to attend. You do need to register ahead of time. I understand there is a wait list right now. We'll have information on that on our website, 21stshow.org. Ruby Mendenhall, professor, poet laureate of Urbana, thank you so much for joining us again today on The 21st Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next week on The 21st Show, it's the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. We'll have a producer on the ground there. We'll be providing coverage all week. We will begin with Reed Epstein, national political reporter from originally from Peoria, Illinois, with a preview of the convention. And we'll talk with historian Heather Hendershot of Northwestern University. She had a book recently called When the News Broke, Chicago 1968 and the Polarizing of America. We'll talk about how we are living still today with the consequences of what happened at the DNC in Chicago in 1968 and how it does and in many ways does not track to what we are seeing this year. That is coming up on Monday on The 21st Show, which is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer, Stephanie Mesqueda. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. We're a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.